And we are back once again. It is the 151st installment. Believe it or not, we are trucking forward here at the Parish of the Patriots. It's great for y'all to join us this week. I think we'll have a great show for you. I am still fighting this flu. I refuse to call it whatever name the government has given this seasonal flu, but I am still fighting the seasonal flu. I feel a little better today, so thank goodness. Hopefully the show won't be quite as disjointed as perhaps it was last week. I was really kind of didn't have a real warm, fuzzy feeling about last week's show. If it wasn't up to your usual standards, I apologize for that. I'm doing what I can do. It was hard getting through last week's show. I'm not going to lie. There was a lot of pausing and half the time I'd forget what I was saying. I do feel better this week, but I am still fighting this thing. So do bear with me. We got a lot of listener supporter mailbag this week. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. I'm really humbled in my heart. If you want to be a part of that, you can find the information at the bottom of the description page. We've got snail mail, Bitcoin Monero, got email address down there. So I really do appreciate it. With everything I've got going on, it really helps a lot. That's all I can say. It really helps a lot. So I'm kind of rushing along here because I do want to go through these as much as I can. I do like to recognize all of you. So we're going to get right into listener supporter mailbag and get right on into the rest of the show. So buckle up and let's do this thing. And yes, we do still have Christmas cards that are floating in. So if it seems a little behind the time, we get Merry Christmas in here. Hey, we're rocking with it. Grandpa, Dad, praying for blessings to you in this special time of the coming of our Lord and Savior. Today, I attended a very holy Catholic Latin Mass on the fourth day of Advent. It was beautiful, reverent, and even mystical, and it was packed full. We're out here, Gramps, and we are praying and faith maximizing. God bless you, Grandpa Dan, and what you do with your words of sincerity to keep us together in a very special congregation. Merry Christmas and love from Jay. No homo for Jay from Canada. There is no homo here. And it is, it is very much appreciated. GPD, I hope everything is working well with you. Forgive me for using old cards. I don't like to waste things. I was impressed with your John 8 sermon. Never heard anything like it, but it connects real good. And I pray that I can get more like it. And that's from Triangle Whip. Hey, we're going to do what we can do. I think we're going to have a really good Christian specific message this week. For those of you who are new around here, we do a Christian specific sermon, if you would. That's usually around the halfway mark somewhere. I mean, just you can't just say right in the middle, because yeah, it's never exactly right in the middle, but bear with it. I think we'll have a good one this week. GPD, Merry Christmas. Sorry to hear about you know what. People that care about their health shouldn't use alcohol. People who use it can't be talked out of it because reasons. You know the meme with the sweating guy who can't decide which button to push. A good example, cognitive dissonance. Picture one button marked, you have free speech. The other, your government is totally corrupt. Best wishes, JB. Let's see here. What's up, Gramps? I just watched your latest Parish of the Patriots. This threw me off. I watched it. You know, I was like, watched it. You know, I guess you're watching the page. But yes, there are those who upload these videos get uploaded, which are just the audio of the show. So that's awesome. I appreciate that. Anyway, I just watched your latest Parish of the Patriots episode, and I wanted to help you out with the medical bills. My school here in Toronto, aka Sodom, denied me a few weeks back because I refused to get infected with their needle. I thought it was getting rough out here for us, but dang, stage 4 cancer. Yeah, it does suck. I did not see that coming, Gramps. You now have a top tier spot in my mind for those that I need to pray for. I just want to remind you that we are not made for this world. Whatever happens with this situation, it matters more that you keep your resolve and your faith, fight the good fight, and know that you have brothers looking out for you. If you can help it, don't stop uploading your videos. Thanks for the content as always, and make sure they don't put the vax in you during surgery therapy. I honestly wouldn't put it past these suckers. Never forget, true death occurs when you abandon his principles. Badolf. I do appreciate it. And yeah, we're going to do the show. Look, I'm going to do these shows until I physically can no longer do them, or the Lord just basically says, that's enough. you know, it's enough, we're not doing it anymore. So yeah, no, that's not going to be an issue. With the cancer, I'm still struggling with going back and forth with doctors and this insurance policy that started the first of the year, and it's a stupid HMO, and then I had the doctor that was supposed to do it, but he's not in the network, and he's the only doctor that does it close to here. Well, the primary says it's got to be somebody in network, so that we find this doctor way off, but everybody's telling me this has got to be done. I've got these other doctors telling me this has got to be done really soon. This needs to be, like, done now, and, yeah, you know, insurance companies don't get in a hurry, and it's back and forth and lots of time on hold. It's beyond frustrating. As far as, you know, yeah, no, I wouldn't. If they said, look, we can't give you any cancer surgery unless you get the vaccine, I'm not taking the vaccine. That's a spiritual line for me as a believer, right or wrong, whether you agree with that or not. I'm not trying to push that on you, that view on you. But for me personally, I could not do that in faith, and I will not take it. But one of the things that's been hard for me with this is because it's perspective, and this idea that, you know, because I think people a lot of times, you know, when I talk to people, they kind of expect me when I discuss this, like, IRL with people, you know, they kind of expect me to have this, like, freaking out attitude about it, and I don't have that. What I've really found a struggle for, I think, in it so far has been just whether to even care, you know? And what I mean by that is, like, you know, everybody is like, oh, you know, like, I'm supposed to just be, like, clawing and fighting this thing. And my attitude is just kind of be like, well, maybe it's just my time, you know? I mean, we're all going to die. I'm not so arrogant as to think that, you know, I'm special and I'm not supposed to die. We're all going to die at some point. Or if I was a young man and still full of, you know, dreams about things I'm going to do someday, I think it would be a lot harder, because, like, when you get to be my age, you're like, well, like, if God said, okay, you're going to get this many more years, what are you going to do with it? I don't even know how I'd answer that. You know, I mean, really, at the end of the day, if I'm being honest, and we should always seek to be honest, is basically wind up what? Doing more of the same, working where we can and trying to just pay bills and buy food and live our lives as best as possible, I guess. I mean, the only real important work I do is this work here on the show. This is the only real meaningful work I do. Otherwise, just same kind of mundane crap the rest of y'all are doing, you know, just whatever jobs we can find or whatever ways we can find to make a living. And I found it really hard to really get very excited about it. I just kind of have almost an attitude of just, well, let nature take its course. And I was thinking about it this morning. No, I actually, I'm not trying to depress anybody with that. I mean, that has actually been my struggle, not a struggle of, oh my gosh, why is this happening to me? I can't believe this. I hate it. No, it's just kind of like, well, maybe it's just my time. And I was thinking about this morning, because I have struggled with this. And I was thinking about it just this morning. And I thought, you know, if I was alive, like, in biblical times, and I was walking down a road and a bear came out in the road and sought to attack me, well, my attitude wouldn't be, you know, well, guess it's just my time, I'll just lay down here and let the bear eat me. I would struggle against the bear. Now, if I lost, yeah, I guess this is how many days I get in this world, and it's over. And I got to thinking of it that way, and I thought, I guess it's sort of like that. So I guess I should struggle against the bear. I should do my best to fight against the bear within reason. And this is no difference. This has popped up, and this bear is coming after me, is sought against me. So I guess I will struggle against the bear and see what happens with it. But anyway, I've had no shortage of lots of advice and it's good. I mean, some of it's really interesting. People have all kinds of information, and I've been going through all of it, and some of it I found pretty useful. So, you know, anyway, let's keep going here. Grandpa, very sad to hear about your recent diagnosis. And then we've got some cancer advice here, which y'all don't want to hear that. So I did look through it though, and I do appreciate it. And that's from Rivana and George. Like I said, very much appreciated. Dan, sorry to hear about the cancer. Your mood and show has not been affected by the news. Don't you feel sorry for people who get such news and have no faith? I know people who have gotten over cancer, so it's not a death sentence. Hope you get well soon. Worked overtime for Christmas rush, so I'm sending a little extra Tony, and I'm humbled I know what it's like to work overtime and hard-earned money, and the fact that, you know, you get enough out of this to throw some my way. I really humble. May God bless you. Really, I do appreciate it. And you're right. I do. I don't know how people get by. And I've seen people in my lifetime. I got years on me now. I've seen people over the years who, you know, claim to be Christian believers, and they receive news similar to this. They get told, oh, hey, you got cancer, or you got this, or you got that. And they do. They lose their shit. I've seen that. I've literally seen that. I've seen people do that. They just absolutely fall apart and lose. I don't know. I don't know how people, they don't do well with it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is, at the end of the day, I mean, what's going to be is going to be. One of my big fears is that, you know, I might get freaked out. I don't know. I just want to, if this is, you know, and again, I'm not like, oh, this is not my, nah, that's not what I mean. I don't want to come across having that attitude. But I mean, if this is, you know, if I'm going to die sooner rather than later, I'm not trying to be a downer. This show is depressing. I'm turning it off. That's not my intention. I just, I hope that I can just finish the race strong, you know, and hold fast to the faith and really, you know, finish in a strong manner. But regardless of how the outcome is, that's how I plan to live. I plan to live in that way. And you're right. I don't know. People that don't have faith, it'll be shown. And things like this, which virtually everybody's going to face. I mean, at some point in time, unless you die suddenly, like in an accident or something, I mean, you're going to get faced with the news that, you know, and the reality. I mean, even if you don't get a diagnosis of something, you know, as you get older, I mean, if you're listening to the show, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be a downer here, but if you're listening to the show and you're 70 years old, you know, I mean, you know, how many days are ahead of you? I mean, you have to face, at some point in time, pretty much everybody is faced with the reality that, you know, this time in this realm that we, as this time in this world is drawing to a close. Things are wrapping up. And I think that kind of serves as like, I don't know, like a graduating test, you know, like really, how much do you believe? How much faith do you actually have? It's like the ultimate trial of your faith when you face something like this. And everybody's going to. I mean, like I said, unless you die just unexpectedly in an accident, but that might be more of a, even though leaving quicker, you know, suddenly and unexpectedly might look good on the surface, it might not be as, I don't know. Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm rambling. This just chalk it up to, you know, this fact that I got this flu, and it's hard to keep my thoughts together. But I think it is like a graduating test, a final test of our faith. You know, do you really believe it? Here's where the rubber meets the road. When everything's going great, it's easy to say, well, praise the Lord, I got me a nice house, a nice car, and everything's going my way, money in the bank. You know, that's easy. But when the rubber hits the road and you face something like this, this is where your faith gets trialed. And I say your, because again, you're going to face this. Even if, like I say, you think you're fine, the older you get, you always become more aware that the days ahead are numbering shorter than the days behind. And you become more cognizant of that. Anyway, finally, final wrap up here. GPT, hope things are looking up for you. You are in our prayers. And that's from George, and very much appreciated, George. We got through the listener supporter mailbag. Like I said, it's a little more extensive than usual, and that just says a lot about y'all. I'll just say it like that. It says a whole lot about y'all. I really do appreciate it. I was asked when all of this started about, you know, setting up some kind of separate fundraiser thing, like a fundraiser page, and I said, no. I said, you know, I got faith in the listeners. If they get something out of the show and they want to step up, they can. I've got snail mail. I got Bitcoin. That's good enough. I don't want to involve third parties. And, you know, I do. I've had, and y'all have really stepped up, and it humbles my heart, and I really do appreciate it. Now, I don't want to, you know, like I say, don't want to put everybody to sleep, you know, feel down or like, God, this is depressing. We've got a show to get through, and we're going to continue. We're going to keep on trucking. We're going to do this thing, folks. So, let's get on into the rest of the show here. You know, living in clown world, one thing that's just absolutely driving crazy is I'm jumping through all these hoops and going through all this crap and dealing with this and that, and, you know, to get this cancer surgery. And meanwhile, the whole world is losing its mind over the seasonal flu, which I also have. Child slap. The government is marshaling billions of dollars to make Pfizer richer in the name of the seasonal flu. Meanwhile, you know, I'm trying to get something that is supposed to be really important done. But yeah, no, the world's losing its mind over the seasonal flu. It's just utter, it's utter clown world. You know, it's just more of the same absurdity, I guess, but it just really highlights it. You know, when you're trying to deal with something like this and everybody's just going around being nuts over what amounts to the seasonal flu. A lot of stuff going on. This past week was the anniversary of the January 6th attempted gang rape of our democracy. and I was thinking, about all of the countless color revolutions that the U.S. throws around the world. You know, I mean, Ukraine, you name it. I mean, they do these things on a pretty regular basis. You had people running around in Hong Kong, you know, setting old people on fire and horrible, violent things. And the U.S. throws these color revolutions all over the world. There's a big dust up going on in Kazakhstan right now. You know, I'm sure it's the U.S. behind it. You know, it's not hard to figure out. Because these things always happen in places where it's strategically to the benefit of the U.S. So it doesn't take a whole lot to figure out who's who's behind it. And, yeah, I was thinking, though, they throw these color revolutions everywhere. And what do they always say? You know, these people are rising up. The voice of democracy cannot be silenced. The people are standing up against this tyrannical dictator, and they're demanding that their voices be heard and that freedom and democracy, it's the freedom and democracy. And yet, with the anniversary of the January 6th attempted gang rape of our democracy, it has just been 24/7 fear porn, hasn't it? It's just the narrative is this opposite, isn't it? Nobody's talking about, well, these people felt that their democracy was threatened by obvious voter fraud. There's none of that. This was the biggest threat to our democracy by these insurrectionists, domestic terrorist haters who attempted to destroy our democracy because they don't love our democracy. I mean, you think about it, really, like, say, with Ukraine, they claim these were heroic democracy fighters, even though they were literally going around killing people. There were people shooting people over this. Nobody showed up at January 6th and did any shooting except the cops shooting Ashley Babbitt. But this was a threat to our democracy. And I guess that's just how it just depends on who's writing it, isn't it? You know, I mean, the victor, as they say, the victors write the history. It's like that. One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. What is happening on the other side of the planet on a country that borders Russia? It's a valiant standing of the people for our democracy. If it happens here in the face of blatant voter fraud, then it's a threat to our democracy. Our democracy is this ever-shifting. It's this ever-shifting narrative. I saw the media people were saying that Trump is now, he's more dangerous now to our democracy than ever, according to our ever-wise sage, the wise sages known as the U.S. mainstream media. Yes, Trump is more dangerous now. He's an even bigger threat to our democracy now because he could really just try to start an out-and-out revolution. I don't think that's going to happen. So far, basically, all he's doing is going around making his supporters mad by telling them to take the vaccine. So, yeah, I don't really. But it's all just fear porn. It's all just fear mongering. And they just act like these people didn't have any real reason to do what they did on January 6th. They ignore, of course, obviously, the Fed instigation angle of it. You know, they show this one. They were shown this one video clip and the people are walking in through the doors and they're all just staying between the little velvet rope. Show these violent insurrectionists. Here they are in an orderly fashion, walking through the doors, staying within the velvet ropes, you know, just. Except for, of course, the places that they film the footage, you know, and they show it over and over. You know, it's like we know the police opened the door, the people just walked right in, but the cameras are right there to roll on these people smashing a window out because that makes good TV, fits the narrative. No curiosity, you know, about Fed involvement. None of that. Nobody cares about that. We still don't see any of the security camera footage. You know, we're not, we got all of this security camera. We're not going to get to see any of that. It's kind of put it in the same file, I guess, as the FDA says they're not going to be able to release any of this stuff about the Pfizer vaccine and how safe it is to like 2097 or something. We just can't handle it. This, just take our word for it. It's a huge, huge threat to our democracy with these people we're doing. Don't believe your lying eyes. You know, they had to board up the windows and throw everybody out because there's seasonal flu, the COVID. The COVID could pass through the glass and get people. That's why they put boards up so you couldn't look in there. But it's just totally not because they were doing any. It's an insult to your intelligence at some point, you know? It's so ridiculous, and it's just so in your face. There's really insulting. It's really insulting to your intelligence that they do this, and they stand up there with a straight face. Well, they just bald-faced lie to you. We know where they're going with this. I mean, they're working now to normalize the mail-in voting so we can have basically voter fraud infinity. I mean, I don't know how people argue, you know, with a straight face that like we need to we've never had mail-in voting before. I'm not talking about like, you know, the absentee ballots. That's a little different thing. We're talking about what they did last time, this mail-in voting. We've never had that on a mass scale before. And yet they act like, oh, well, we have to have this now because otherwise it'd be a threat. Threat to our democracy. We have to have blatant fraud, otherwise, you know, the democracy can't survive. They're going to work to normalize this. All the while, they're demonizing people to complain about it. Because yeah, you can say, well, I didn't go. I saw one disturbing thing, by the way. They were talking to some FBI shill about all of the people they're arresting, all the people they arrested. And the FBI shill made it a point to say that they're not just going after people that actually attended this thing. They said they're not just looking and investigating people that actually showed up. They're investigating anybody who might have like encouraged people to go to this thing. So yeah, if you've got social media posts back where you were like, oh, I can't go, but you know, more power to you, MAGA, you stop the steal, go, march, yay. You're probably could be investigated too. They're being demonized. They're a threat to our democracy, along with people that refuse to take the vaccine. It's a blatant power grab. You demonize those that you plan to go against, that you plan to crack down on, put in the camp, whatever it is they're going to do. You demonize them. You got to dehumanize them so that when you do what you're ultimately going to do to them, people don't have a problem with it. They're not people anyway, right? Here's the thing. It's not legitimate. This is not legitimate leadership. This is not a legitimate government. The more when you have to, a government that has to really just impose itself, just force a fake narrative, dehumanize those who oppose it, crack down, threaten, coerce people, threaten to have their jobs taken away, threaten to. One of the things I saw they did, they were doing it, it's so obvious, you know, they did a little special in the news talking about how many of these people the FBI have been able to track down because of internet sleuths. You've got these randos. See, the FBI can't track down these people who attended the January 6th deal, but luckily these randos on the internet have been able to put it all together. These randos on the internet have been able to figure out who these people are, and then they give a tip to the FBI. And the FBI is able to find them because of randos on the internet. No, let me tell you how that works. The FBI is finding them by illegal searches. They're doing illegal warrantless searches on people's devices, social media, whatever the case may be. They're doing illegal searches. And then they have to cover that up when they find somebody, say, okay, we're going to go arrest this guy. But the way we found him was illegal searches. So they have to wash that, you know, like they talk about laundering, like drug cartels launder their money, you know, like a drug dealer launders his money. They have to launder how they found these people because they found them illegally with illegal searches. They would, if they went to the court and said, we got this guy, they'd be like, well, how did you find him? Well, we had this Israeli spyware on everybody's phone and we were able to go in and find this guy. They can't do that. It'd be thrown out of court because even this sham legal system that we have now, you know, I mean, there's just so far they're willing to look the other way. So they just invent these rando internet people and they say, well, we got this anonymous tip from a rando on the internet that said this was, I don't know, Jim Jones that went to the January 6th gang rape of our democracy. And we investigated this anonymous tip we received from this super stealth, this super sleuthy internet left-wing sleuth who found this person. And lo and behold, they were right. It was him. We found him. That's all they're doing. It's so obvious. They're doing illegal searches, tracking people down. And now they're saying they're going to go after people that didn't even go. How the hell does that work? Yeah, you didn't go pick up a podium and walk around. You didn't take any selfies in the Capitol, but you talked about how you thought it was a great thing. We're coming after. We're coming after you, too. It's not legitimate. You can't have a legitimate government that behaves this way. And I know you talk about these things, all of you looking at these things and thinking about these things. It's easy to get down about it, but this is not legitimate. A government cannot act this illegitimate and hold together. It can do it for a while, threaten people, coerce people, demonize, dehumanize vast segments of the population. See, it's one thing if you got like, you know, 4% of the population and you're dehumanizing them, you know, and you're going to do like an ethnic cleansing of them. You know, that's not too difficult of a thing to pull off. I'm sorry. But what they're trying to do is basically 50% of the population. They're trying to do this to a huge amount of people. That's not going to work. It's just because of the sheer numbers. They're trying to give this image that's only a small group, but they know. They know it's like half the population. Even if you're being generous, 40% of the population, that's millions and millions and millions and millions of people. That's not 2%, 3% of the population that they're dehumanizing, that they plan to segregate and put in camps. That's a workable amount. Half the population is not a workable amount. And then the side that actually supports this, I mean, besides them, those who are getting rich, those who are just drunk on their own power, you know, I'm talking run-of-the-mill shit libs that think this is somehow like they're partaking in their sharing this power by siding with the authorities on of this. See, even the people that support this, it's a diverse coalition. There's a lot, they don't have like a unifying thing. There's a lot of diversity there, which means you've got a lot of groups that actually have their own separate interests, and they've got to try to keep them on page with their agenda. I think it's an uphill road. I mean, right now, yeah, they just basically the media is acting like they can dictate reality. But all that's really happening is they're looking more and more ridiculous every day. It's so absurd. And this is what happens when things are based on lies. It's so absurd because you can sit here and watch these people be interviewed, whether it's about this sort of thing or about the vaccine or whatever the case may be. You can watch them, and in the same single interview, if it's long enough, they'll contradict themselves. They will say that you got to get tested, you got to get the vaccine, that you got to get vaccine and boosted. And if it goes on long enough, they'll contradict that and basically admit that none of it actually works. This is what happens when things are based on lies. They can't help but to contradict themselves. And they're running into so many contradictions because everything they're basing this on is a lie. You're trying to rally a diverse group of people to an agenda for your own power that only you are going to benefit from, not them. And you're trying to base it all on a lie and all the while try to sound coherent and hope that the media can just keep reinforcing it and people will keep going along. But how many people really believe the media? I mean, I even wonder how many shit libs actually watch CNN and believe that shit. You know, I mean, at some point your mind's got to be like, you know, man, come on, bruh. I mean, come on, bruh. How many people? How many people actually? Because we can't believe any of the numbers they tell us. They tell us like half the country support this insane agenda. But do they really? I mean, they lie to us about everything. Do we really think that half the country supports this nonsense? Does half the country really think that if we don't have mail-in voting now from here to eternity, that our democracy can't stand? I mean, people really, even shit libs, do they really honestly believe that? That if people are forced to go down and like show a driver's license and their voter card to vote, that do they really think that that's somehow like keeping, scaring people away to where they can't vote? Do they really believe that? The same people that say, you know, you shouldn't be able to buy alcohol, tobacco, lottery tickets, or a gun without giving your entire life history, think that you ought to just be able to fill out a card and stick it in the mail, and that ought to be the vote. And no way that fraud could happen with that. Do people really believe that? Or do they just think that, well, it doesn't matter because I'm going to get what I want? But they're not going to get what they want. And there's the problem. The run of the mill, say if it is half the country that supports this, at some point in time, they're going to notice, the longer this drags on, they're going to notice that they're not getting what they want either. They're trying to, like with the doom virus narrative, they're trying to explain that right now by saying, well, the problem is these other people haven't gotten the vaccine. I mean, yes, you can still catch it. You can still catch the seasonal flu. You can still get sick. You can still pass it to others. And you're still going to test positive. You still got to wear the mask. But the reason of that is because these other people won't take the vaccine. At some point in time, your mind is just going to say, wait. This doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. Too many contradictions, because it's all based on a lie. At some point in time, these people are going to realize that they're not getting what they want either. They were promised a back to normal. They were promised their student loan debts were going to evaporate and go away someday. They were promised they were going to get affordable health care. They were promised they were going to get like jobs and stuff, you know, be able to make a living. Some point in time, the half of the country, if it's that much, and I don't think it is that much, but we're just going to say the run-of-the-mill half of the country that on some level or another supports this agenda because they think they're going to get something out of it because there's nothing else binding them together, they're going to realize they're not getting what they want either. It would be like the conservatives. They're starting slowly but surely to realize it doesn't matter how many Republicans you vote for. We get the same outcome. These people are going to realize they're not getting the things that they actually want. I mean, they're getting more hardcore Bolshevik agenda, yes, but they're not getting the actual things that they want. They're not getting affordable health care. They're not getting like jobs that pay a living wage, that have a future. You know, they're not getting those things. They're not getting like, hey, a debt reset to where maybe we could start like, you know, I don't know, building a life, you know, somehow and have a future. Maybe I could buy a home someday. They're not getting affordable housing. They're not getting any of the things that they think they're going to get out of this. At some point in time, you can't just keep blaming everybody else and say, well, the reason you're not getting it is because. At some point in time, the people that nominally support this are going to realize they're not getting what they want either. And the whole thing is going to fall apart and they wind up with zero support. And all they're left with then is just brutality. It's just brutality. It's just cracking down, threatening anybody who dissents, threatening to put people in camps, threatening to put people in prison, and you can't run a country that way. I'm sorry, you can't. You might think you can. You might think that you can run a large group of people, because that's what you're talking about, a large group of people with sheer brutality and threats, but you can't. You can't. For the run-of-the-mill person, like if you're living in a dictatorship, if you're living under an authoritarian, an official authority, what they call an authoritarian regime, that's not a democracy. We live in an authoritarian regime now. But I'm talking about a legitimate authoritarian regime. If you lived under a dictator, you live in a little country in Central America or in the Middle East, and you're ruled by a dictator, and you're just a regular working guy, he's not messing with you. You don't have anything he wants. He has no reason to mess with you. Under our democracy, you're messed with constantly. You got an army of little tyrants that are looking for some rule that you have broken that you can be fined for, you can be harassed over, you didn't get permission for. There's a never-ending stop to harassing you. If you live under an authoritarian regime and you're just a regular working person, they're not going around fooling with you. Why would they do that? Why would they do that? They don't have any reason to. So what happens is, under these authoritarian regimes, the people have no reason not to just, more like, I mean, they're being left alone, by and large, and they go about their lives. Going about their lives. They're not living under this constant threat of force. An illegitimate government, which is what we've spiraled off into, an official, just illegitimate regime, they at the end of the day, like I say, right now, they still enjoy somewhere nominal support. People that are, I think a lot of it is just people lying to themselves because they don't want to face the reality. They're enjoying enough nominal support to keep it going. But at some point in time, as I've already said, the people that are nominally supporting this are going to come to the realization that it doesn't matter who you vote for, doesn't matter which party you vote for, doesn't matter, you know, what you say you support or whatever the case, no matter who you virtue signal to on social media, whatever the hell, you're not actually getting what you want. Run-of-the-mill shit libs. Let me ask you this. As bad as you hate the orange man regime, what are you really getting different under the Biden administration? As a group, Biden administration. What are you getting different, though? I mean, what has really actually changed? And that question can go both ways. Run-of-the-mill normie cons is still running around worshiping Trump and thinking he's the second coming of Christ or something. Let me ask you, really, what's changed that much? I mean, yeah, they're going harder on forcing the vaccines on you. I guess you could point to that. But that's a negative. I mean, what is really, like, actually changed? It's very, very nominally different. But if you support this stuff, what are you getting? When comes the part that you get what you were hoping to achieve? I believe everybody's motivation at the end of the day, and I'm talking regular people. I'm not talking about these oligarchs, these corrupt middle manager politicians. I'm talking run-of-the-mill people. At the end of the day, everybody just wants their life to be better. They just want their life to be better. This transcends race. This transcends politics. At the end of the day, for your average person, they want their life to be better. They want to have a hope for the future. They want to think that, you know, I can work and like better myself and afford a house and a family, and I can my life will get better. All of this upheaval is because nobody thinks their life is going to get better. And why should they? What are they pointing to? We've got massive inflation now, and they're telling us this is great. It's great that things are getting more expensive. And we call it inflation. It's not really correct because technically, by the technical definition of inflation, wages are chasing prices and prices are chasing wages, and you got to spiral up. But the wages aren't really going up. Not really. So what you have here is just everything's becoming less affordable. I've seen it, you know, and it's getting so accelerated now, it's undeniable, but I'm old enough. I mean, say back in the early 90s, you know, a regular working guy such as myself could afford a new vehicle every however many years. I mean, not every year or some ridiculous thing, but I mean, you could afford a new vehicle every, say, 5 years or so, you know, maybe more than that, but you could afford a new vehicle. It was within the realm of possibility. You could afford to take trips on your vacation. You could afford to go somewhere. You could afford to buy, I don't know, a boat for fishing or something like that. You could afford these things. Can't afford them now. Can't afford them now unless you're going to go into hock forever. Now, some of these vehicles cost more than what a house cost just a few short years ago. You got to go into hock for God knows how many years just to afford a new pickup? Really? At the end of the day, people want to believe their lives are going to get better. And people will be in denial to a certain point. But at some point in time, people realize their lives aren't going to get better. And as that happens, those in the population, the percentage of the population that are nominally going along with this are going to keep sliding off. That support is going to keep falling away because your life isn't getting better. Things are getting even more expensive. Doesn't matter how much the media tells you things are getting better. The economy is booming. People are going to realize that, no, it's not. My life is not getting better. The media can tell you, well, you're just the exception because you're stupid at only to a certain point. But then people are like, well, everybody I know is in the same boat as me. We can't all be stupid. Maybe the economy isn't doing so great. Maybe things aren't getting better. And that support slides away. And when it does, as it slides away and they wind up with nothing, no actual support from the people, they're left with what? Brutality, coercion, threats. Threats, coercion, brutality. That's all they're left with to hold on to power. And I'm sorry, that's not sustainable. It's not, it's never been, it never will be. They're having a hard enough time with their threats and coercion and dehumanizing roughly half the population. Imagine if that's 80% of the population. If they're left with threats and coercion towards 80% of the population to remain in power, how is that sustainable? it all comes apart. It all comes apart, and people get this vision like, oh, well, how does that happen? What, the people are going to get in the street and just start burning Washington, D.C. down? No. No, it doesn't even have to come to that. What happens is people just quit going along with it. Their whole just ungodly list of rules and this and that, and you have to follow, and you got to follow this regulation and that. And what happens is people just quit. The little things that people can get away with, the little things, yeah, people aren't going to go up there and form a mob and yeah, because, you know, they could get shot. But they could ignore this rule and this permit and just refuse to go along. Every chance people get, because when people don't buy into it anymore, people don't have any reason to voluntarily pay the fine or voluntarily pay for the permit or voluntarily, you know, give this and that. People cheat every chance they get because it's not legitimate. Why should you go along with a system that's not legitimate? If you think the system is legitimate, at the end of the day, is supposed to benefit you, then you're going to go along with that system because you buy into it. But as the people don't buy into it, people will just ignore a whole vast amount of little things that they can get away with. Now, it might not sound like much, but collectively, when you've got a whole nation that's just basically getting away with as little, just not obeying and not following all of these different rules to the extent that they can get away with, because it's just, there's so many people ignoring these things that they're not enforceable any longer, it'll fall apart. The whole thing will just start crumbling, because then it becomes more, it snowballs, and it becomes bigger things that people aren't going along with, and bigger, you know, more and more broader mandates and rules and things you're supposed to do that people just quit doing it. This is like, what's the point? It's not legitimatized. The people, they don't bought into it anymore. And it all comes apart. The point is, and we need to get into our sermon this week, but the point is, as bad and discouraging as things are, and it is discouraging. Look, I try to be overly optimistic here, but this idea that what they're doing here and what they're promoting is like inevitable, like they're unstoppable, like, oh my gosh, there's just nothing we can do to stop them. They're on a plan that I believe on a long enough timeline is destined to fail. It's inevitable that it will fail. And it's not going to fail today, but it's doomed to fail. Any kind of power plan that involves just simply brutalizing the people and forcing them to let you stay in power is never sustainable. It's just not. So don't be discouraged. I mean, you just kind of, at the end of the day, you're left with weathering these things, you know? I mean, that's where we're at. I mean, they're just, that's the realistic option. You just got to try to weather the storm. But understand that they're kind of up against the clock themselves. We can feel like it's us or our backs are against the wall and this and that. But understand, everything's not going to go their way either. And I think their backs in a lot of way are against the wall already. And I think there's a sense of that. You see how hard they're pushing this. There's like a sense of urgency. And I think that's a big part of it. Anyway, we need to wrap up and get into our Christian specific segment. So, you know, if you're not going to stay for that, you should. I think you get something out of it. But, you know, hey, that's up to you. If you're not, glad you joined us for the regular part of the show. As for the rest of you, you know what to do. As we always say every week, get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. And before we get rolling on our Christian-specific message this week, our sermon this week, I did have one more from the listener supporter mailbag. GPD, you're in my prayers. I have a question. I think you touched on many shows ago, but did not Jesus tell us to pray alone and secluded? When I pray alone, I feel much closer to the Father, and that's from Mr. T. Well, I think it's supposed to be a personal experience. I mean, I understand the point of, like, say, group prayer that is held. And there are times when I think that really does a thing. For instance, if you had 100 believers gathered up for the sole purpose of, say, you have a brother that's been thrown in prison unjustly, and you're coming together as a group to pray with one single mind and heart that this brother might be released, and so as one mind, put one voice together, you pray for this one cause. You know, I think that's great. I think that's a powerful thing, but that's usually not what happens. Say, if you get 100 people together, the preacher stands up at the front and he leads a prayer, and it's generally some generic prayer. You know what I'm talking about. And I'm not trying to be critical about this or act like, oh, I'm so much smarter. But I mean, the thing that's always bothered me about that, if you have a room, say, of 100 people and you've got one person leading the prayer and it's generally going, like I say, it's going to be some sort of generic prayer. The thing is, out of those 100 people, they all have something different that's on their mind, and their mind is going to be on that different thing. If somebody's battling a health problem, they're going to be sitting there in their mind thinking, God, help me with this health problem. If somebody's just lost their spouse and they are grieving, they'll be like, Lord, help me with this grief that I'm undertaking. Or perhaps you have somebody that's just filled with joy and is grateful that God has blessed them, and their prayer just wants to sing out. They just want to sing out in prayer and praise God for his generosity and mercy. And yet everybody's trying to just go along with this generic script being led by somebody. And that's not what God wants from us. I mean, God wants a personal communication from our hearts. When we pray alone, you're free of distraction. You know, you don't have, you know, the kid in the pew behind you kicking the back of your seat. You don't have, you know, this noise, this distraction. You don't have other people around you. When you pray in a secluded place, and we see this example many times through the Bible. Jesus would do what? He would go up to a secluded place. He would go to a secluded place to pray. When you go to a secluded place, when you at least can get some alone time and pray, you can really look in your heart and be like, well, what am I trying to convey here? We're always trying to get this feeling, this notion, this understanding that the Lord is closer to us and not further away. That, should I say, a drawing near to him, that he may draw near to us, sort of thing. We want to get closer. We want to open our minds. We want to clear out all the clutter in our minds and get closer to the Lord. So yeah, I do. I think that it is a much more efficient process. I think it comes more to the point to be in a quiet place, in a secluded place if possible, with some alone time when you sit down in your prayers. I do think it is much more fruitful. Again, the whole point is you're supposed to try to understand God. And it's not even necessarily what's so important as what you're saying. I think we're cautioned against that in the Bible. It's not about what you're saying, but trying to listen, trying to understand, trying to open your heart and just, God, I want to hear you. I want to understand. I want to know. And so that these things can be revealed to you. And again, if you're in a crowded room with a bunch of other people, that's going to be really hard to do. You're just really not going to have that. Our point is to be trying to get a one-on-one fellowship with God. Now, we're going to get off into our Bible reading this week, and I really wasn't sure I was even going to do this, because this is something I read this past week, and I kind of thought, well, I don't know if I want to really get into this on the show, but honestly, I haven't come up with anything else. So this is something, as I read through it this past week, really struck me, and you know, it stayed with me. I've been thinking about it off and on all week and pondering this. And again, I haven't come up with anything else, so I guess we'll share it here. We're going to look in Matthew chapter 17. We're going to do verses 1 through 8. And after 6 days, Jesus taketh Peter, James, and John, his brother, and bringeth them up into an high mountain apart, and was transfigured before them, and his face did shine as the sun, and his raiment was white as the light. And behold, there appeared unto them Moses and Elias, talking with him. Then answered Peter and said unto Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If thou wilt, let us make here 3 tabernacles, one for thee, and one for Moses, and one for Elias. While he yet spake, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and behold, a voice out of the cloud, which said, This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear ye him. And when the disciples heard it, they fell on their face and were sore afraid. And Jesus came and touched them and said, Arise, be not afraid. And when they had lifted up their eyes, they saw no man save Jesus only. As those of you who have been listening for a while know, you know, I'm quite fascinated. I'm quite fixated on this notion of understanding the difference, the relationship between the eternal realm and this temporal realm that we live in. I've said it before, but people always have this idea that like the eternal realm, the kingdom of God, the eternity is like way off, you know, and we've always had these illustrations, you know, way up in the sky is way up there. God is way up there. And I don't believe that is right. I believe that it is all around us. I believe it's actually very, very close. I believe that it's this temporal realm we live in is just almost just a little sliver. It's this very small thing. We tend to think of this universe that we live in as being huge. You know, we read these stories about, oh, they got this telescope and this star is this many millions of light years away. So far, it would take you millions of years to travel there at the speed of light. It's that far away. This universe is huge. But if you eliminate time, if time does not exist, which in the eternal time does not exist, time as we understand it doesn't exist in that realm, then it's not far away at all. The only reason it's far away is because of our sense of time. This star is a million light years away. But if you eliminate the million years part, then it's irrelevant. It's just right there. So our understanding, because of the eternal, because time as we know it doesn't exist in the realm of God, the eternal, the eternal means that I don't think the eternal is way off from us. And this kind of got me thinking about it, and I hope this isn't sounding like gibberish again. I'm still fighting this flu, and I worry that I'm not keeping my thoughts together. Last week I really struggled. I did. I kept stopping, and then I'd forget what I was saying. I was worried. It wasn't very good. So in this story here, so you got Jesus, and he takes them. He grabs his guys there, and we're going up on a high mountain apart. Once again, separate. We're going up here alone, and he was suddenly transfigured before him. And they looked, and they saw Jesus, and they saw Moses, and they saw Elias, or Elijah. It's the Greek thing, Elias, and then they make this statement, you know, oh, it's a good thing that we're here. We can build three altars for you. We can build three tabernacles for you. One for you, one for Moses, and one for Elias. Understand, they were scared to death. You know, always that statement is like, well, we'll build these altars for you. You have to understand, they freaked out. I mean, they freaked out. All of the sudden, they see Moses, Elias, and Jesus standing there talking, and Moses and Elias are basically ministering to Jesus, and they're having this conversation, and they're freaked out. They're freaked out. And then to top it all off, then a voice booms down. This is my son. Listen to him. And they fall on the ground. They're just about, just like their heart is probably ready to stop. They're so terrified. And then all of a sudden, Jesus says, look up, don't be afraid, and everybody's gone. And they're back to seeing things in a normal light. I was thinking about this experience, because we always, as Christian believers, I don't know about you, but me, you know, always wanted like to hear the voice, you know, to like, I mean, yes, we listen through the Holy Spirit. Yes, we pray. This is how it works for us. But haven't you ever wanted like, you know, to be like by yourself and pray, and then all of a sudden hear a booming voice from heaven saying, do this. And it'd be like, wow, you know, that be this amazing thing. So you read back in the day of this happening, and it's like, I'd like to experience that. I think that. I'm sure at some point in time, pretty much any Christian believer has thought of that. I'd like to hear a booming voice. I'd like to hear a voice coming out of a burning bush. I think that'd be a cool experience. But this got me thinking, as I read this, it got me to thinking. For instance, we know that they looked up and all of a sudden they saw Jesus shining bright. They see Moses and Elias there. They're ministering Jesus. But let me ask you this. Where did they come from? I mean, it doesn't say they saw Moses and Elias come down from heaven and suddenly appear. They just looked up and all of a sudden they were there. Where did they come from? Where did Moses? Why did they pick that time to show up? I mean, they're just all of a sudden. They were there. And again, when you think of where is eternity, where is this realm of eternity, the kingdom of God? Is it way off? Or is it really just all around us? I was struggling, thinking of a way to illustrate this. And the best I could come up with, when you look at, because like when you look at different times in the Bible, when like prophets would have a vision, for instance, usually it was very brief. And I think there's a reason for that. When it's extended, You know, they'll like, here, swallow this scroll and it will be bitter in your stomach, but sweet in your mouth. And it's like, to me, it's like, okay, they had to take something to basically, I think, keep their mind in one piece, or perhaps even to keep their spirit from just being ripped out of their body. But there was a reason if it was extended. Most of the time, these were very brief, such as this right here. And they're just about to go crazy here. You know, they just get this glimpse. And the best way I could think of as illustrating this is, imagine if time, this reality as we perceive it, and bear with me on this, I'm not trying to sound way out there, really not. But that, like I said, I struggled to think how would be the best way to illustrate this. This is the best I could come up with. You know, you've seen these like virtual reality headset things that people put on, you know, and they put it on, they're like, oh, this is amazing. They're swinging their arms around because in the virtual reality that they see, they're doing something. They're playing tennis or whatever the case may be, you know, and you may have even, you know, they've had these ones you could put your phone on. So if you may have tried it before, and it has a really weird feel to it. But these virtual reality headsets, and imagine if like this time, this temporal realm that we live in is essentially like we're going through life with a virtual reality headset on, and we perceive this reality that we exist in. Now, in this instance here, all that happened, sticking with this illustration, again, this is just an illustration. All that happened is somebody reached up and just cracked open the VR headset so they could peek out for a minute. Just peek out, just crack it. And all of a sudden, they're used to experience this reality. We went up on the mountain here with Jesus. We went off by ourselves. And all of a sudden, boop, someone just cracked open the virtual reality headset. And they saw what was really going on in the real world. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. What is this? This realm of time that we exist in, it's essentially like we're going around with it. If you think of it this way, and the reason I went with this illustration, besides the fact I couldn't come up with anything else, is to understand that eternity is around us like that. Like if we understand what we live in time, this world, but we're just basically walking around with a virtual reality headset. Do you want to know where eternity is? It's right here. It's without the headset on. Now, this gets interesting sticking with this, because this comes to answer the question of where did Moses and Elias come from? Well, they were there all the time. They just cracked open the VR. They just cracked up the VR headset and looked out the bottom, all of a sudden saw them there, but they were there all the time. They were just there in the eternity. You couldn't see them because they had like the VR headset on. I know it's not the best illustration. Bear with me here. I'm doing the best I can here. But perhaps Moses and Elijah, they were there all the time. They've always been walking around with Jesus. They're through this whole thing. They just went off by themselves and they got to see a little peek of it. This is what's actually happening. This is what actually is going on. Not what you perceive. But this is what's actually, crack open the VR headset and look out into the real world, the eternal realm. Now, if you understand it this way, you understand that eternity is here with us. Now, here's something that you might find comforting. Here's something you might find disturbing. Probably a mixture of both. Who's ministering unto you? I mean, it's a pretty good guess. Moses and Elias ain't following you around because you ain't Jesus. But perhaps there are others who have been tasked with following you around and ministering unto you. Now, bear with me on this, because this falls in with like much of our own lore about guardian angels. You know, people talk about guardian angels. I don't really believe in that. But what if that lore comes from the idea that we are being ministered to from the eternal realm? There are those who are just tasked with following us around and kind of tending to us and kind of nudging us one direction or another and kind of just looking after us, maybe guarding us from spiritual attacks and things such as that. I don't know what their tasks involve. But if you get the idea that there are those, I don't know who they would be, you know, who are tasked, ancestors perhaps, who are tasked with following you around. You got a guy or two, a couple of guys, and their task is to follow you around and tend to you from the eternal realm. And this could be comforting. You'd be comforting in the idea that, you know, you got people right there watching after you, helping you out from the spiritual realm. But it could also be disturbing, rather, because they're there all the time. You know, as we're told that, you know, things that are whispered in a closet, You know, there's nothing that's not heard. There's nothing that's said, because we're walking around with the VR headset on. You got these guys following you around because it's their task to follow you and tend to you and kind of try to, you know, whatever help they can give you or protection they can give you or whatnot. And they're seeing everything you're doing. You think you're all by yourself. You're looking around. Nobody knows what sin you're committing. And those who are tasked with following you around spiritually as a Christian believer, they're having to stand around while you're doing this. And they're like, bruh, what are you doing there, bruh? You know, and they're like, oh, man, looking around, being awkward. Everybody's going to listen to this and be all paranoid now and be like, oh, man, you know, they've seen that. Yes. Yes, they probably saw that. But why should we not? We as Christian believers are to be as Christ-like as we can. Christ gave us the example. Now, if the example of Christ is Moses and Elias were tending to him, were ministering to him, were there kind of with him, then if we are Christ-like as Christian believers, then by that example, there are those who are tasked with following us around, with tending to us, to looking after us, to try to nudge us, guide us, or protect us, whatever their job is. I don't really understand what the job is. But when you think about that and you realize, you know, you are essentially, you're basically being watched all of the time. Again, this could be comforting. You're never alone. You're not in this alone. You might think you're alone and but you're not. You got folks with you all the time. Or again, if you're sinning and doing things you shouldn't do, it could be kind of disturbing. Oh, y'all saw that. That's embarrassing, you know. But perhaps even that's a good thing, because you can be more conscious of what you're doing. Now, the fact that, you know, as Christian believers, it doesn't change the fact that as Christian believers, we're supposed to be Christian believers, whether anybody's watching or not. And see, it's easy to fall into that trap of, oh, people are paying attention to what I'm doing. You know, people are looking. I'm in a public place. I'm at church. I've got to be more, you know, because everybody's more upright, righteous when they go to church, right? You go to church, everybody got their Sunday best on, and there ain't nobody using no curse word, no profanity. Everybody's, you know, trying to, oh, yes, brother. How are you, brother? You know, oh, brother. The night before, you was raging and breaking the furniture in your house because you can't control yourself, because you're all angry and you don't understand the things going on around you. But the next day, it's yes, brother, I'm very, yes, the meek shall inherit the earth. Praise Jesus. Everybody's on their best behavior when you know they're looking, but that ain't how we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be Christian believers always, whether anyone's looking or not. And the fact is, if we take this example and this illustration and understand it accordingly, we ain't ever alone. Somebody's watching all the time. We got people ministering to us. They're there to help us. They're following us around. They're not like spying on us. They're not voyeurs here, but they're ministering. They're there to help us. But we're being watched all the time. There's somebody witnessing what we're doing all the time. That's why we're supposed to really believe. You know, and that's just really the measure of your faith, isn't it? That's a measure of what you believe. Anybody can show up in public and show up to church and talk about, yes, I love Jesus. I love Jesus. Don't you love Jesus? I love Jesus. Jesus is awesome. Jesus is awesome. But it's what you're doing by yourself when you think nobody's around. Do you love Jesus then? Are you thinking about how much you love Jesus and what would Jesus do? And you're trying to figure out, you know, what's Jesus trying to show you? What's God trying to show you? What's the Lord trying to make you understand? Are you doing that? Or are you just back off doing your own thing, chasing your own pursuits, following your own desires? Is the Lord close to you as much as possible? Or is it just when you're in public, yeah, you try to put on airs. But once you think nobody's looking, the Lord's as far away from you as possible. Now, hopefully you're far enough along in your faith that you're trying to get close to the Lord. You're trying to put your heart, have your heart set on the Lord and understand and live as upright a life as possible, whether anyone's looking or not. Anyway, voluntarily. I mean, this isn't supposed to be like a deal where, oh, now I'm scared. Now this is great. Now I'm being watched. Now you're telling me I'm being watched. Okay, we're not supposed to have a heart of fear. We're not. It's not a guilt trip thing. I mean, you're going to do what you're going to do. But we are supposed to always have our hearts on the Lord. Again, whether we think anybody's watching or not, and this is what we're called to, because this is how we're tested. This is how our faith is tried, is sifted, is, you know, how dedicated are we really? How much do we really believe this? You know, and I think a true test that is whether anybody's around or not. You know, is this something we're truly pursuing from our heart, or is it just something we're putting on airs about? Because the more it's true to your heart, you know, the further you're actually going to get. If it's just something you put on for show, or you say because you're supposed to say it or whatever, I mean, you're not going to get anything out of it. I mean, aside from perhaps a pat on the back or whatever, people think you're a good person. Oh, yeah, you're a great guy. Pat on the back. But you're not going to actually get anything out of it. You're not going to spiritually grow from that. You're just fronting. You're just getting out of it what you're seeking to get out of it. Praise from men, viewed upon by other people is he's a good guy. Shows up to church on Sunday. Wears a nice suit. He's a good guy. You're supposed to get something. You're supposed to be growing. This is something you really, truly dedicate your heart to. Doesn't mean you have to live as a monk out in the middle of nowhere, but it is an attitude. It is a mindset. It is a mindset. This is something you truly pursue in your heart. It is a lifelong pursuit. You know, yes, you go on with the rest of your life. Yes, you live your life, you work, you do all the things that everybody else is doing. But in your heart, this has to be your lifelong pursuit. This is what it means to be a true believer. And whether you find it disturbing or not, I believe there are those who are tasked with ministering to us. But that means you're also being watched as well. Anyway, hopefully you got something out of it. Again, I apologize if it's a little disjointed. Again, I'm fighting this flu thing. I'm feeling better than I have in a while, so thank goodness for that. So, you know, hopefully you got something out of it. We're going to go ahead and wrap up on that note. I do thank you all for joining us. Thank you again for those who've been very generous for your financial support. I really, really do appreciate it. And don't forget, on Fridays with Sven Longshanks for the Daily Nationalist, a little change of pace. That's always fun. So be sure and check that out if you haven't. And of course, as always, be sure and check us out next week right here for the Parish of the Patriots.